In today's episode of Real Nurse Stories, I interview Tracy Churchill and Emma Vasoulis. Tracy has 17 years of clinical experience with 15 years in leadership positions. She is currently the nurse unit manager of one of Australia's busiest emergency departments and manages nearly 300 nursing staff. Tracy is passionate about developing and nurturing nurses and has a special interest in the ways workplace culture can impact on resilience, retention, and satisfaction. Emma has 15 years of clinical experience, 13 of these in leadership positions. Emma is currently working as an Assistant Director of Nursing in Clinical Excellence Queensland in Practice and Innovation. Emma's most recent background is in business practice improvements and clinical redesign. Tracy and Emma have recently written a series of four articles titled Nurse Cannibals Eating Their Young. These articles were published recently on LinkedIn. I first became interested in this topic when I was researching resilience and when I was training to become a coach. I came across an article in the American magazine Marie Claire that published an article called Mean Girls of the ER, The Alarming Nurse Culture of Bullying and Hazing by Alexandra Robbins, who had also published a book, The Nurses, A Year of Secrets, Drama and Miracles with the Heroes of the Hospital, which was based on hundreds of interviews with nurses over a four-year period. The phrase nurses eating their young was coined by nursing professor Judith Meisner in 1986 as a call to action to stop nurses ripping apart inexperienced co-workers. Another book called Toxic Nursing by Delagasse and Volpe also dedicates a chapter of their book to the newbie, mistreatment of new nurses. Tracy and Emma state that the aim of their series of articles is to put an end to the adage, nurses eat their young. They want to put that firmly in the past where it belongs and invite us to think about an age where nurses feed their young. Hi, Tracy and Emma, and welcome to Real Nurse Stories this morning. I've invited Tracy and Emma today to talk about a series of articles that they've recently written called The Impact of You and the Extinction of Nurse Cannibals. And these articles have recently been published on LinkedIn. And I'm really thrilled to have you on the show here today, Tracy and Emma, because I think this is such an important subject to talk about. So if it's okay with you, I'd like to just dive in and just ask you both, what prompted you to write this series of articles?
I think it was our shared experience. Tracy and I worked in the same emergency department. We were graduate and very new nurses. So Tracy was actually a year or two ahead of me, but she was still relatively new to the environment. And I joined the department in a cohort of 10 graduates, which was a real turning point in the department's recruitment strategy, because normally they usually took one or two graduates. And this was a challenge and a bit of a curse for our cohort. The challenge and a blessing. The challenge was that the department wasn't really structurally set up to cope with that amount of new graduates. There were no mentoring or education programs in place at the time. But the blessing was that we all quite rapidly learned to rely on that group of graduates, the 10 of us. We sort of shared information and nurtured, I guess, each other. But then we reached out to people like Tracy who were relatively new and had come before us and that were receptive and open. So it was about that joint shared experience that Tracy and I wanted to really write this series.
Yes. When we started writing it, we originally were talking about it in past tense because we thought that things had already changed so much, and in so many ways they have. So it was our shared experience and us wanting to influence the future of nursing and just completely eradicate this phrase, nurses eating their young, and replace it with nurses feeding their young. But as a part of this process of putting these articles out, we've been flooded with stories of people who've experienced the exact same things, and some of them not in the distant past, as in very, very recently, which means that it is still alive and well in some workplaces.
That's really interesting though, isn't it? Because I think certainly some of the articles that came out originally, and I think the whole concept of nurses eating their young came about in the, I think it was the 1980s. And it is interesting, as you say, I think some of the responses that I've had from sharing the article have been, you know, nurses recognizing that that brings back memories of their experience as a new nurse. So it's interesting that it's still around, and yet it's not something that you hear people talking about very much, which I think is the other interesting aspect.
Yeah, it's definitely taboo, I think, still, Eva.
It is. And I wonder why, what your thoughts are on why that's still a taboo subject.
I think it has to do with stereotypes for nursing, in part, that, you know, nurses are caring and nurturing, and we are genuinely caring and nursing and nurturing people, but sometimes not towards each other. So I think it's a bit of a shameful part of who we are and who we, how we can act. Mm.
The other thing that I kind of, as I read your articles, it made me reference back to some work I did, different subject, but it came across, or came up rather, in some research I did that talked about the concept of horizontal violence and how, in relation to oppression in nursing, because nursing is predominantly a female profession and has a history of being subservient, and that drives this culture of kind of almost suppressing some of the angst and the difficulties and the stresses, and pushes that out. And it's kind of, I was reading those articles, it kind of reminded me of that, thinking, is that still part of the culture that we have in nursing, that suppression, that it's hidden, it's very complex, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. So some of the feedback that we've had has really broadened our view of what we were originally talking about, because in the original article we were talking about nurses eating the new nurses, but we've had people discuss that they've had nurturing experiences as new nurses, and then when they've tried to develop themselves in their career, that's when they've experienced horizontal violence, or in some cases, from their perspective, people from lower levels sort of rallying against them. And also some people in those positions not being supported with the resources and things they need to provide the type of environments that they would like to give new nurses. So it's really, really interesting. There's been so many cases of people saying, oh, one other nurse got me through, or these people supported me, but also so many cases of people saying it was horrible and giving us really, really horrible examples, even being chased down corridors and things that just sound, you know, things that sound like they would be on a Monty Python sketch rather than an actual
hospital. I know that, and you do kind of, it is almost like a bit of a throwback in some respects to some of the old traditions in nurse training, but then, as you say, there's evidence from having published those articles that people are saying, well, actually, this has happened to me, and happened to me fairly recently. And yeah, I think that's the interesting thing about this. I'm interested to know kind of comments from your immediate circle and people that you work with. What's been the reaction to your series of articles from your colleagues?
Well, the people who we know personally in our inner circles have been overwhelmingly supportive, because you know, many of them are people who we studied with or people who we've worked with in different environments, yeah. and yet this shared experience does connect us all. So I guess in recent times I've had a lot more conversations with people about different behaviors they've experienced, how that affected them. And so many people have said how experiencing that themselves made them make a personal decision never to do that to anybody else because they don't want to continue this cycle.
And we've had lots of feedback from colleagues and across our networks that they have experienced it either in the, you know, the distant past or more recently. And we've had a little bit of feedback that it's been quite almost courageous to actually talk about this. And I think that that's, it makes me a little bit sad that people see it as a courageous topic. It should be just general conversation. Like, we want to shine the light on these behaviors. Like Tracy said, we did sort of have the perception that this was distant history where we would like it to be, but we do know that newly qualified nurses, casual nurses, agency nurses, they still experience this sort of behaviors, and people have confirmed that this sort of behavior is still happening. You know, as of now, we did want it to be history, but it doesn't seem it is.
No. And certainly, you know, a recent example from my work that I do coaching nurses is having worked with a young nurse who almost left her nursing career, left her grad program halfway through for behaviours that just broke my heart to listen to her story, you know, because she was somebody who was, or is actually still, you know, very accomplished. She's a mature entry nurse who's got a lot of life experience, came into nursing with a passion and almost left because of things that happened to her in her career, early career. And you know, the comment that resonated there for me was, you know, if this is what it's like, I don't know if I've made the right choice. And you just think, you know, we can't afford to lose good nurses, not given that we know, you know, we're going to have a shortage in the future. And I think that, for me, makes it more important to have that discussion and get this topic out into the open. And I think that's hugely important.
I've definitely had those thoughts that, you know, was this the right choice and is this really what nursing's about? Luckily, I had a really good purpose and a why about why I wanted to be a nurse and why I stuck to it. And I'm quite stubborn as well. But definitely had those thoughts many times over my nursing career. And I have a daughter who's actually a recently qualified nurse. And for me, a lot of this is about making the workforce and her experience better than mine was, and all of those nurses and new graduates, new agency, new colleagues coming into our workplaces. I just want their experience to be better.
Absolutely. And when you were talking about it being, you know, that particular nurse you were talking about almost leaving, so many do. And that is a tragedy because I think it's in 10 years, almost 50% of the nursing population will be of retirement age. Yeah. So this is something we're facing very, 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 very quickly.
Yeah.
We've got increasing demand, less nurses available. We can't afford to be losing good people. And the problem with this is that I always thought that people were doing this as an initiation cycle, you know, the hazing type of behavior, where they believe that you won't last in nursing unless you are tough. So the way to teach you to be tough is to be cruel to you or in any of the other behaviors that we've already talked about in our articles. And the problem with this is that it does make sure that people who stay in nursing are tough, but it rules out so many other types of people. And there are so many different types of people that we do need in nursing. We talked about in one of our articles, the sort of caricature of the matron, you know, the battle axe, and that's not the only type of person that we want in nursing. I mean, if we're feeling vulnerable and we're in an unfamiliar environment, what we want is someone who can connect with us, someone who's kind, compassionate, and empathetic. And people who are naturally more sensitive are more sensitive to criticism, lack of support, and all of the other things that go along with this nurse cannibalism. So losing those people is a tragedy for nursing. And I know many of those who have left, and it has really affected me because I wish we could have kept them.
I agree. I think that's a real shame that we have lost people. And we're talking purely here in the context, I think, of Australia, but I'm also curious to know, I suspect that this issue is similar in the UK, certainly from experiences that I have had personally and that I know other people have had. So I don't think it's just an Australia issue. I think it's probably much more widespread than that. And I just, the other thought that came to me as I was reading your articles was there's been so much work done with health service providers around communication, and particularly a Cognitive Institute have worked with teams around how to have those difficult conversations. And we know that, where there is an environment where psychological safety isn't developed to the point where people can speak openly and freely and can have a difficult conversation with perhaps someone whose behaviour is not helpful, that why this is still such a buried issue and not talked about, because it almost feels, when you think about those strategies that have been in place in organisations, that it must be really buried for it not to have surfaced when teams are doing that work. That's the other bit that I kind of wonder about, and I just wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Well, where we currently work, one of the things that we've brought in is, have you heard of nonviolent communication, Eva?
I have a little bit, yes.
So there's this amazing body of work that's been done external to hospitals that would be so valuable for all nurses and everyone working in health. And what it is it's a way of communicating that helps you clearly hear what other people, what their needs are. And how to support them without using your own emotional resources, but also not getting caught up in the thing that goes in between you and them. There's this ball of emotion and excuses and reasons and all of these other things that people bring up when they're trying to deflect or express themselves, but it's not clear. And what nonviolent communication does is help remove that middle part so that you can clearly hear what they're needing and you can meet those needs yourself. And it's also interesting because it teaches you how language can be used in a cruel way, and it's quite malicious, some of the things that we do just with language. In one of the I don't know if this was in one of our articles, in one of the things that we recently wrote, for example, there's an example where people say, they give an apology and they would say, "I'm sorry, you're so sensitive." That's not actually an apology. That's a disguised way of saying another criticism, you're too sensitive. Yeah. Where a real apology would start with, "I'm sorry, because you're trying to be accountable and take ownership for the behavior that you did." So no apology will begin with, "I'm sorry, you." So when we're talking about difficult conversations and providing feedback, what's really interesting to me is it's not only poor behavior that goes addressed. Often it's great behavior that's not addressed as well, because people do really wonderful things and they don't get feedback. For many parts of my career, and I know the same for other nurses, when they have done things really well, it seems like they've been unnoticed or it doesn't make a difference because no one has said anything about it. And it's easy to wonder how you're going and not knowing if you should keep doing that or if something else needs to change. And even at one point in my career, I went to one of my managers and requested to do, a performance appraisal. And they said, "Oh, you don't have to because you're fine." And I said, "No, I want to know how can I improve, or, what could I change to be better?" And they just said, "Look, this is just, we only do this if someone's having problems." And that was really confusing for me, because as someone who always does want to improve.
Yeah.
And we all can, you know, no one's perfect. It was difficult.
And that reminds me of a phrase, feedback is the breakfast of champions. And it's so, so true. You know, I previous role, I used to work with four nurse managers, nurse unit managers, who were lovely and so experienced, but they struggled enormously. If I ever gave a compliment, which I did frequently, and it was like, almost didn't know what to do with it. And I'd be like, I'm giving you a compliment. It's okay, you know? So there is, you're right. It's about how we provide feedback for people in a timely and positive way. But sometimes I think, certainly some of my experience doing that has been that that's uncomfortable for people because they're not used to it. And that's so sad, because how do you know, you know, if nobody ever tells you? And that's kind of mixed up in this pot, isn't it, as well? It's
yeah,
a very complex issue. So I think, what do you think is important now in terms of, you know, how can we've kind of taken the lid off it. It's almost like what are the things that you think need to happen, knowing what you know, having had the feedback you've had from the article, what are kind of some of the next steps, do you think, now?
I think that all of us need to do some reflection on our own behaviours, on our past and present behaviours. And I think that's the aim of these articles, that Tracy and I really wanted to have a bold conversation and then have people think about their contributions to the future of nursing, either in a good way or in a bad way. And just touching on that, the feedback that you were talking about just then, Eva, one of my favourite books for feedback is called Radical Candor. It's by Kim Scott. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but Kim has worked at Google and Apple and lots of those, you know, really famous organisations and quite high up. And she has a strategy about giving feedback to people in a way that... Even difficult feedback in a way that is encouraging and is a beneficial thing for her. And the philosophy really is, the nuts and bolts of it is, if you care about people in your team and you care about them reaching their potential, you need to give them feedback, even the difficult feedback, because your discomfort over not giving feedback, and it's a discomfort thing, we're all uncomfortable giving feedback to people, but just because I'm uncomfortable giving someone feedback, it shouldn't hinder their career progression. Absolutely. And often it does. You know, Tracy tells a great story about receiving feedback early in her career that really changed the trajectory of her abilities and you know, opened up a whole world of possibility. And just because we're uncomfortable doing that, we shouldn't limit people's ability to contribute to, you know, healthcare. And it's selfish of us to do so.
I think that's a really good point. And I also wonder whether that being uncomfortable with providing feedback is maybe one of the drivers that perpetuates this kind of nurses eating their young, is that, you know, again, some experience from a role was often... my team didn't always know how to tackle something, particularly around poor performance. And they were very open about that, which was actually a huge thing for them to say that, and involved a certain amount of coaching and helping and observing, shadowing, those kind of opportunities. And I wonder whether that struggle with how do I say to somebody, actually, that's not okay, that practical, how do I do it, stops people from challenging, as well as if I challenge it, am I going to have a difficult time? So there's two aspects to that there. And again, just kind of thinking, it's, you know, 2020 is the International Year of the Nurse and Midwife this year, and the big push is around leadership and making leadership available to the next, or leadership opportunities available to the next generation of nurses. And I kind of think, you know, that these are the issues that actually we really need to be thinking about, how they're built into training at all levels, really, starting with grads, you know, starting with how do we challenge something safely in a way that's not going to, you know, create that fear that somebody's not going to sign off on my final placement because I've challenged something, to, you know, perhaps the nurse who's been qualified a while who would have access to leadership training. Because again, that's an observation, that these topics don't seem to be threaded into some of those programs in a way that we're talking about here. And just really checking in with you, is that your experience?
I think they're not intertwined into leadership. You know, this dialogue about horizontal violence or nurse to nurse violence, I don't think it's discussed. I think it's still a taboo sort of, it's a shameful topic, I think. I think there's a lot of shame around it. There's a shame of people who experience it. They feel ashamed. The memories bring back a shameful feeling. And then anyone who has, I guess, takes the time to reflect on their past behaviour, I hope would have some shame or some, you know, cognizance around the impact that probably had on people. And when you think about the impact of nurses not reaching their potential, the impact on patient care, it's really quite mind-blowing. You know, we know that about 60% of care is best quality care, the best standard. Mm. About 30% is low or no value care, and we cause harm about 10% of the time. And it really makes me wonder, of that 10% of the time that we're causing harm, how much is that human factors?
Yeah.
You know, the fact that people are feeling vulnerable and shameful or ashamed, how much are we contributing to harm just because we can't treat each other with a really human connection?
That's true. That's very true. And there's a direct correlation, isn't there, also between, you know, teams that have great communication and patient safety indicators. We know that that's, you know, that's some research in there that tells us that, and it is tangled up with that communication.
There's something I'd like to add here, and that is that we do have now some good courses, like we have the nonviolent communication course. There's also the Courageous Conversations course that our organization does provide to us. One thing I would love to see in addition to what they teach there, which is great because they teach you all of the things that need to be said in a difficult conversation. They do teach a little bit of coaching and things like that, and also how to manage your emotions. But one thing that I feel like is missing from that training is the human connection. So at the start of difficult conversations, and Emma alluded to this before when she was talking about radical candor, that we have these conversations because we care about that person. And that just as that as a sentence would be great at the start of a conversation. So that the person knows, I'm not giving you this feedback because I don't like you. I'm not trying to give you this feedback to shut you down or stop you. I'm trying to give you this feedback so you can do even better next time, and that you will grow because of this. You know, when I, as Emma said, I got had a difficult conversation early in my nursing career. And even though the person didn't say to me, I'm telling you this because I care about you, and the message was delivered in a very blunt way, I knew that she did care.
Yeah.
And that's why she was telling me this, because any person on that team could have mentioned this to me for months and no one did until this person did. And they said, you're such a good nurse and you do all of these things so well, but this one thing will shut you down and you will go nowhere unless you change it. And she was totally right. But I mean, the thing that I think we could add to any difficult conversation to make it easier at the start is just to say, hey, I want to give you some feedback when you're ready, and it's because I care about you and I want you to do well.
That's a great way of putting it, isn't it, really? Because it sets up that conversation, that person feeling safe.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. It provides psychological safety around something that can be really, really confronting. And the end point is, like Tracy alluded, you set up the conversation with that caring, you know, I care, like for Tracy, I would say, Tracy, I'd like to give you some feedback because I care about you reaching your potential. So I know that you can be, you know, whatever you desire in your career. I can see real potential in you, but this one thing that you're doing is going to hold you back. And I want to, you know, I'd like to talk about that with you.
And even as soon as he says, I care about you reaching your potential, so I want to give you this, I really want to know what it is. I'm hanging on her every word because I'm thinking, what, I can do something else to improve? Tell me. And it's not like I don't want to hear it because I really want to hear it now.
And that's such a powerful phrase, isn't it? Just that one, if we were just to encourage people to, you know, give feedback using that phrase, that just that tweak and that shift in the words would make such a difference, wouldn't it? And it's, I think that's the thing, you know, as we talk about this and having read the articles, it's, you, whilst it's complex, you know, there is a lot that can be done that's really doable.
Really achievable, little, like we're trying to give little tips on you know, how you can intervene in a way that is, you know, will protect everyone, keep people safe psychologically, how you can do little tiny tweaks that you know, little bite-sized things that change behavior. And if we just change little bits of behavior over and over again, eventually change cultures.
And I think that's the other thing, it's, and I know that you're both passionate about leadership as I am, and I think that's often, I read a lot around that subject and I coach nurses around leadership, but it's sometimes it's the how do you do it that's missing. You know, we talk in broader terms, but practically, if I'm a nurse, you know, working in ED and this is my situation, what how do I do that? That's the bit that's often not there. And I think that's hugely important that we're able to say, you know, these are some little bite-sized things to help you have or start that conversation off on the right footing. So I think that's a great way of thinking about it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think people say you should do something.
Yes. Yeah.
They just don't tell you what to do and how
to do it
in a little chunk.
Yeah, and you don't forget those things either. That's the other thing. I think where somebody's giving you feedback in a way that's constructive and meaningful and caring, you don't forget that. And that helps you then to role model those behaviours when you're having to give someone else feedback. So it's kind of got a roll-on effect, hasn't it, in a lot of ways. I just want to ask you both, and maybe Tracy, I'll start with you first. What advice would you give to a nurse who's listening to this episode and is recognizing all these things that we've talked about and, you know, maybe is stuck a little bit in that awful place of what do I do? How do I deal with this? What advice would you give to them?
Well, my first advice would be to find a good friend at work, ideally, because, you know, in our series, Emma and I talk about lifting each other out of the cannibal's pot. If someone's getting thrown in there all the time, but there's someone with a hand ready to pull them out straight away, they won't be staying in there for long. And it is hard when you're in a dark place like that, especially when you don't know who you can count on. Usually there'll be at least one person in your workplace who you have some sort of rapport with, and that would be a great place to start, having someone to confide in and get advice from. But also what I would love to say to them is please don't leave. We need you. The tide is turning, and from putting this series out, we can see how many people are committed to this change. We want to be nurturing our new staff, and you're part of that. So one of the most important things from my perspective would be please stay, because you can see what not to do, and this is what you're being shown is what not to do. And now it will make you even more committed to doing the right thing. And when future nurses come to you, and you will be buddied with future nurses, student nurses, or even new nurses when you're more experienced, you can show them the right way, and you can be this person that you so long to have right now, but you can be that for them. So holding on to that vision of you in the future, helping others, I think will help get through this dark time.
Emma, do you have anything that you would like to add to
that? I don't have a lot to add because Tracy's really summed it up. I think I would reiterate, don't give up. This article series has shown us that this is not an isolated instance. It's a really shared experience. So even though it's not very helpful, there is a little bit of, support in that, like knowing that you're not alone and it is a very shared experience. It doesn't make it right. Not giving up, and be the change that you want to see. Like Tracy said, be the person that you wanted to have, be the leader that you wanted to look up to but couldn't find. That's really carried Tracy and I through some difficult early times in our careers.
That's good.
May I add one more thing?
Yeah, sure.
If you can try and make a little game with yourself when you're going to work. So someone who is not particularly pleasant, it could be a secret goal of yours to say something to make them laugh or to make them smile. And then if they do, you win that day. And then you go back again the next day and you have another little goal like, I would like, and you just keep trying that over and over and over again. But so in your mind, you've got an outcome that you're trying to get, and it's a bit of a game. And then when you get it, you get a bit of a boost to self-esteem because you've managed to do something really difficult. And also at the same time, you're building rapport with them. And the more they smile and laugh in your presence with you, you're building that relationship.
That's so true. Because I can recall doing that many moons ago. I worked a long time ago in theatres, and it was one of those situations where we got sent to work because our ward closed. And of course, I'd never worked in theatres. The environment was completely different and quite a cliquey environment. So if you weren't accepted as part of the team, which a few of us weren't, we were very much outsiders. And nobody ever said hello to you. Nobody ever said good morning. When you walked in the morning, heads down, nobody even acknowledged you. And I made it my mission to learn every name of every member of staff. And when I used to walk in the mornings, I used to, good morning by name. And I used to get the looks that used to say, how does she know my name? You know, that quizzical. And I carried on, I kid you not, it took me nearly 3 months to get somebody to actually acknowledge and say good morning back to me. And it was such a good feeling when they did. I was like, yay. So it's true. That was how I dealt with that. Just, you know, it became a bit of a mission, if you like. I will crack this. And eventually it did. But yeah, it's just funny. Makes me laugh. So we've covered such a lot of things there, and I think that's been such a great discussion to have this morning. And I'm so thrilled that we've been able to catch up and do this interview and help to put this out even more widely, really, I think is important. And I just wonder, really, what's next for you both in terms of, it's a bit like Pandora's box, we've taken the lid off, and what are we, you know, what are the plans next for?
Yeah, you're right. We did, this was a four-part series. We just set out to do like a really quite logical approach through nurses from, you know, our early experiences right through to how we've tried to lead and nurture and feed new nurses. But from that, we've actually had such good conversations with people who've reached out to us that we're going to do two more articles in this particular series. So part five will be focusing on nurse-to-nurse cannibalism. And so that's, we've had a lot of people tell us that they've had, you know, violence from people who are more junior to them, like up and sideways horizontal violence as well. So we wanted to give that some focus, and we're going to write an article on that. And part six, one of our readers said that nurses are starving, the nurses eat their young because they're starving. Mm. And that really resonated with us. And so we want to do a final article on what nurses are starving for. And we'll probably touch on topics like resilience, education, the things, self-care, all of those things that contribute to how you can actually feed yourself if you're starving, if you're a starving nurse, instead of eating off of other nurses. So that will probably round out the series. And after that, we have decided to do another article series on mastering leadership through collaboration. Mm. So Tracy and I are going to write on our experiences and then invite some of our colleagues to chime in with a third voice in the articles on different leadership topics that we wanted to talk about. So that's what's next. But Tracy's got some exciting stuff she's working on as well.
Okay, do tell.
Thank you. I'm actually in the very early stages of writing a book on human-centered management. Yeah. So how to do management, but with those little touches that make things more human, just like we talked about at the start of a difficult conversation, that one phrase can turn it so far in a different direction. All of those little things, because we need to keep our nurses, we need to support, nurture and create environments that make them thrive. And it's not only leaders that do this, it's also peers, but managers do have a really important role in setting standards and making a place where people feel good to come to work, they have good relationships there, and that people treat each other with respect, and also that they're all growing personally and professionally while being at work, because great workplaces contribute to great lives. And this book is hopefully going to be sort of like a manager's best friend, as if I was just sitting next to them saying, oh, have you thought of this? When we do that, we also include this, just the actual how. When you were talking about people talk about leadership theory or management theory and they say you should do this, but then there's no, this is how you do this. So this is the book of how.
Well, that's great.
Maybe it should be called that, the book of how.
That's a good title. I like that. I look forward to reading that, Tracy. I think that's, it's very much needed actually. And that's, I think we need to have more books that are real leadership books for nursing, in terms of, I know, as I'm sure you probably have, you've referenced your kind of some of your key books that you've read, but I think we certainly, the reading I've done around leadership has not been always in the nursing leadership book arena, because I think there's a lot to be gained from being broader in your reading, but to have a book that starts to tackle some of these issues and gives the how, I think is really important, really important. And I just, as we're talking, I just wonder whether, given that you've written this series of four articles, whether there's any kind of desire to revisit maybe that original article and publish this a bit broader than LinkedIn, whether you have a plan to write this up in a almost combine, Emma?
We haven't really discussed, where to from here. I think we're a little bit taken by surprise about how it has resonated with people and how they've been able to relate to their experiences and this shared experience. So we're definitely open to whatever comes our way or whatever we pursue. And I think that it is a subject that, like we touched on earlier, really should be incorporated into leadership training. You get people coming into leadership positions through hard work, but often by default, and they're not well supported in the current system to actually do the job really well. And that's almost I think it's almost a form of neglect to not give people the tools that they need to succeed in those positions. And it does a disservice to their teams and to the patients they care for as well.
Well, that's great. It's been a real pleasure today to talk to you both. And I'm just so excited to see where this goes and what next. And I think you've opened up a really important topic in nursing, and I'm thrilled that you did that, and it's been great to have you here today, so thank you for that.
No, thank you for having us. It has been a real pleasure to come on.
Thank you.
Yes, we're very grateful because you've helped share this, and hopefully if other people get to read these articles, maybe they'll have a couple more practical strategies up their sleeve as to what they can do when they're in these difficult situations. Yeah. So thank you.
No, you're welcome. And that's the important thing. So thank you both.